Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to WriteStream Tuesday. This is your host, Daria Ann, and I want to thank you for joining me here today. I apologize for clearing my throat during that long intro music, but I'm glad you're all here with me today, and no matter where you're listening in the world, I hope you're doing well, and I'm looking forward to today's broadcast because I'm very excited to welcome author Lisa Tarvez. Well, she's an author, a metaphysician, holistic health practitioner, and the host of another program here on the WriteStream Radio Network called Just Believe with Lisa Tarvez. And I'm going to bring her on here in just a moment, and one of the things we're going to do is clear up a lot of the misconceptions, kind of separate the fact from fiction when it comes to psychic ability and angelic communication and, you know, pretty much all things in the spiritual realm. So I'm really excited that Lisa's here, and we'll also be taking your calls at 347-945-7246. And just before I bring her on the air, I just want to do a quick programming note to let all of you know that if you've missed an episode of WriteStream, or an episode that's archived on the WriteStream Radio Network, you can go to blogtalkradio.com/WriteStream. You can listen to Lisa's archive shows, as well as Military Monday with author, military historian, and journalist John D. Gresham. Obviously, his show airs, it's called Military Monday, and it airs every Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern. I also wanted to announce, and I'm really excited about this, that I'm going to be speaking with a woman today who is interested in hosting her own show on WriteStream, probably on Wednesday. We haven't decided yet when she's going to broadcast, but she's excellent. She's a counselor, psychologist, and she does really excellent work here in South Florida, and I know she's going to have a lot to say, and we're going to kind of create the concept for her show. Will be a call-in, kind of like a Frasier, but her name is Dr. Billy, and she's very excited, so I'm really looking forward to bringing her on board. So stay tuned for more information about that. And as for me, I'm just, in addition to my WriteStream duties, I'm ghostwriting a book for a client, which is thankfully 90% of the way done, and just juggling a lot of things, including another website project, which I'm not at liberty to discuss today, but I will certainly be mentioning as soon as we go live. So again, I want to thank you all for listening. And without further ado, I'm going to bring on the air my friend, Lisa Tarvez, who is an author, metaphysician, someone who communicates with angels, and the host of Just Believe here on the RightStream Radio Network. So hang on here for a moment, and I'm going to bring her on the air. Hey, Lisa, how are you?
I'm great, Darian. Nice to be on the show. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. I'm very excited, Lisa, because I think, you know, as I mentioned, one of the things that you and I talked about before bringing you on, one of the things we wanted to do today, in addition to talking about your book, is to really kind of clear the air about what it truly means to be psychic. I know there's a lot of skeptics out there, and, you know, rightfully so, because I think there are also people who present themselves as psychics who really aren't, so I think they do a disservice to the profession. But I do think that there are a lot of people walking around, and maybe because of the way they've been raised or their upbringing or for whatever reason, you know, predisposed ideas, that they don't really, you know, they don't really understand what it's all about. And then there's other people I've run into who've said, well, you know, if somebody's a psychic, why weren't they able to predict this or that? Or why can't you predict lottery numbers? You know, and so I think, you know, that's one of my goals for this afternoon's show is to kind of maybe go through that and, you know, clear all that up. But first of all, I want to give you an opportunity to introduce yourself and we can get into all of these different topics.
Okay. My name is Lisa Tarvis and I do all kinds of stuff. I have a master's degree in metaphysical science. Board certified as an expert in the field of holistic health by the American Association of Drugless Practitioners. I do a lot of energy work, a lot of energy healing that comes into a lot of different modalities, from Reiki to Shambhala to aromatherapy and sound therapy and just on and on and on. There's a list of a bunch of different things that I'm certified in. I also am an herbologist, so you know, pretty good with herbs and what, you know, what to take for what. You know, trying to try an herbal remedy before trying to, you know, trying something that's stronger than that for, you know, the little things. Obviously, the big things you got to see a doctor about and maybe get some heavy-duty pills. But, yeah, so, and now I've written one book, and I'm working on a second, and I love writing, which is, you know, just I think it's always been a passion of mine. So I enjoy doing that. But I've been able to see and talk to angels since forever. I don't remember ever not being able to have them in my life, and you know, it's a beautiful gift. I'm very blessed. I'm not one of those people that have ever been afraid of it. So, you know, I understand people who shut it down because, you know, of fear of what's going on, but I've never had any fear. So, you know, it's a little different for me than, you know, than a lot of other people, but that I've talked to on my show and just in my general practice. So, I enjoy everything that I get to do. I enjoy working with my clients, whether it's, you know, in person or on the phone or, through chat or email or whatever, helping them deal with whatever it is that's going on in their life.
Wow, those are really amazing gifts, Lisa. And as I'm listening to you, I'm thinking, oh my gosh, I want to ask her about this. I want to ask her about that. So let me start. Let me kind of back up and let's talk about your book first. So why don't we do that? After all, this is RightStream. So Lisa's book is called Just Believe. And Lisa, tell us a little bit about your book and how that evolved, and of course, where we can purchase it.
Okay. The book was always, my favorite word is believe, and I'm somebody who, you know, I don't like to tell people what they're supposed to believe. I just want them to believe in something, you know. I mean, be passionate about something, know that there's something more out there. I'm not a religious person per se. I'm a very spiritual person. I believe in all religions. I believe all religions have a lot of right in them, you know, a lot of things that are correct. And of course, some things that aren't, you know. So, I wanted to write a book, a basic book, and this is, you know, I think if people talk about the criticism on my book, they're like, it's too short, and it's too easy to read, like it's too simple. But that was actually my goal, and I wanted it to be a very simple introduction to, first of all, my life and to my beliefs, and just in general to spirituality and what spirituality is about. So that's where the book came from. It was something I always wanted to do, and I ended up really enjoying it. And once I got started, it went really pretty fast. I mean, you know, once you really got rolling and I got an outline done and things, it was pretty quick. So I ended up with 16 fairly short chapters, but in the book, and covering a range of things that, you know, just about me and my childhood and what it's like to, you know, do my job, why I believe what I believe, where all this stuff came from, you know, whether or not you're a light worker, talking about chakras and empaths and all these words that people hear, but they're not really sure what they mean, you know. So every chapter in the book was kind of written with the idea that I could write another book on just that chapter, on just that subject. So it's very much a an easy, simple book. You don't have to. What I noticed when I was getting my master's degree, all the books that I was reading for school, I felt like I needed a PhD to read it. You know, it was so hard.
Wow.
You know, so hard to read. So I wanted to make it simple and fun, and I wanted to throw my personality in there. And let people see that, you know, just because I have gifts does not make me a wacko. It doesn't make me different. I'm a really ordinary, just down to earth, regular kind of person that happens to have a few extra things thrown in there.
That's excellent. Now, Lisa, where is your book available?
Oh, it's available anywhere books are sold. You can find it on Amazon.com, obviously. You can find it on Barnes & Noble, any place that they sell books. Obviously, if you go to a store, it's not one of the top sellers. Not yet, anyway. You know, would love that to happen. But, if you go to a store, they can order it for you. If they don't have it, they probably don't. That's what I've been hearing anyway. People going into stores trying to get it, and they're like, we don't keep that one in stock, but we can order it. So it's actually just called Just Believe. There's no subtitle, and it's by me. And you know, you can find it if you put Just Believe into like or put my name into a Google search, you're going to find it.
Excellent. And of course, I just want to let everyone know also, if you want more information about Lisa and her book, you can visit her website, lisatarvez.com. So definitely check that out as well. Now, Lisa, I was laughing when you were saying, you know, that in the book you kind of prove to people that you're just a normal person, and that ties in with one of the things I wanted to talk about today, and that being, you know, the conception of somebody who's a quote unquote psychic or angelic communicator is like some kind of a kook. And I have to say, in my own experience, I'll just set this up, that it wasn't until about 1997 that I realized that everything I'd been told about psychics, legitimate psychics, was completely wrong. And it was thanks to a legitimate psychic, I'll say, that I got rid of panic and anxiety disorder. Because I had these ideas in my head that they were people that looked at crystal balls and they didn't really live in the real world and they were just kind of out there. So
yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about that. I mean, what's been the feedback and your experience with people with those kind of misperceptions in their mind?
Yeah, it drives me crazy because, I mean, I've had people walk into my office and they're actually shaking. My first thing is, okay, calm down. Why are you, they're like, I'm so nervous, I'm so nervous. I'm like, are you nervous about, like, what I'm going to say? They're like, no, I'm just nervous to meet you. I'm nervous, I get nervous when I see somebody like this. And I'm like, when you come into my office, you're coming into my home, basically, because my office is right in my house. When you first walk in the door, it's the first left you make, boom, you're in my office. And I am so flipping normal, you know? I mean, it's just like I have three teenagers, I've got a husband, I've got two dogs, three cats, and no crystal ball. I'm not wearing a turban and I'm not wearing a robe. I'm usually in yoga pants, you know? And it's just we're having a conversation. That's it. And we're having a conversation where I'm going to receive some messages that that are going to hopefully help you on with whatever's going on in your life. And sometimes those messages come from angels. Sometimes they come from spirit guides. Sometimes they come from deceased loved ones. I don't know what's going to happen ahead of time any more than anyone else, but it is always comfortable. I mean, I do make people cry. I do that often. I admit that, but I've got tissues right there. You know, I've got water. It's just, I'm prepared. If you get too dehydrated, I can give you some water. If you, you know, need some tissues, I can handle that. It's not a scary environment. It's fun. I make jokes and I make light of things and I try to make people feel as comfortable as possible, whether it's in person, on the phone, whatever. You're having a conversation with basically a friend that can help you, you know, solve some of your problems, hopefully.
Right. And, you know, and that's an important point, too, because it sounds to me it's more about guidance. I think sometimes people think, you know, you're going to predict their future and it's going to be exact. But what they don't understand is there's also something called free will and there's a lot of variables in life.
Absolutely.
So what you're able to offer them is sort of guidance to kind of point them in the right direction. Is that an accurate way to put it?
That's actually perfect, because that's one of the first things that I like to tell people is that understand I'm going to give you the messages as I receive them and as I interpret them, because they don't come through like words. I mean, I'm not hearing actual words. I'm getting thoughts, and the thoughts are not my thoughts. They're coming from somewhere else. So when I get the thought, I then have to interpret it, and sometimes I'll just say something, and because one of the things that when I was first practicing what I do to do for a living, because, I mean, I had the gift for for my entire life and didn't actually use it to make a living, but until a few years ago, and when I started to do it, I started to have to say, I really had to start trusting these thoughts. Because sometimes I'm like, I can't say that because it would be something so inappropriate that would come into my head. And, you know, something that I would never actually say to somebody I just met, you know. And it would just pop into my head. And I started, if I didn't say it, it ended up coming up anyway. That they ended up saying it, or it, somehow it came up. So I had to really start trusting the thoughts that were coming in. And now I say anything, and people sometimes are, you know, it's just personal. It can be, you know, something about a relationship, and it, you know, that's personal, you know, and I feel like, wow, why are they telling me this? You know, I don't think I should know this, but it's important. It's important that I pass it along. So that's why I get it. I don't get things that are too personal, like to a point where it's not something that needs to be acknowledged. If it doesn't need to be acknowledged in the person's life, I'm not going to receive the thought. It's not going to come. It's not going to come into me. If it's something that's too, I can't read minds. That's the other thing I get all the time. People ask me, "Can you read my mind?" Because they're completely uncomfortable with the thought that I can read their mind. No, I can't read your mind. I'm getting gifts from the spirit, from the spiritual realm, from the angelic realm. I'm getting these thoughts and I'm passing them on to you. And a big part of it, like you were talking about free will, is I tell them, here's the deal. I'm going to tell you what they're telling me, okay? And this is basically what the best path would be for you to take. This would be the way the angels are saying things would be best. You would be happiest. You would be fulfilling destiny, whatever. And I can't promise you this is the way it's going to go, because you have free will. You have the ability to ignore everything that I say, ignore every intuitive little poke that they give you. And other people that are surrounding you also have that ability to affect the outcome. So anyone, and this is when I say when people are looking for a psychic, anyone that tells them that they can 100% predict this is exactly what's going to happen, they're lying to you. There is no way that any psychic in the world is going to always be correct. Never. I mean, the best psychics in the world are said to be the most famous people you've heard of, are said to be accurate maybe 70% of the time, and that's high. And that's only because, it's not because they're not good, it's because of the fact that free will changes things.
Right, and it sounds like, and God has set things up that nobody can mess with your free will, not even angels, not your spirit guides, not anyone else. I mean, they can say, just as you said, this, we think this would be the best path for you to take, but you can say, you know what, I don't want that. So, like, for an example, maybe just to give a concrete example, like, you might see somebody has a new job opportunity on the horizon, but they can, when that opportunity comes up, they could reject the job and say, no, I'm going to stay where I'm at, or whatever.
Because people get comfortable. If you're comfortable, say that job requires a move. Say that job requires, you know, a long commute, or if not a complete move, whatever, you know, people are naturally not comfortable with change. That's just nature. That's common, you know, that's just people, you know, so it's common to not be comfortable with change. So if you resist that change and you're like, you know what, I'd just rather keep things the way they are, because that's how we're comfortable with things the way they are. If you resist that change, then you've just changed your outcome. And it's not because the psychic was wrong. It's because you made a choice that affected what could have happened, what could have been. And basically that just resets the path. That just changes things. It doesn't mean that you've just messed up your life. It just resets everything, and now there are different paths that are created for you.
That's pretty neat. So I want to ask you about something, because I'm listening, and I had a friend recently who had someone predict his death. And I want to ask you, one, is that even something that is that even information that anyone is allowed to receive from the other side? And even if, let's just say, you know, this friend of mine said, well, this person has been accurate before, he predicted another friend's death, and I found that so stunning that anybody would sit down and say it's going to happen on this date. I mean, it was very specific, on this date, and I think he even predicted that he was going to be killed. It wasn't just death. It was really, really very disturbing to me. So I wanted to get your take on that and how the rules work, I guess, in terms of people like you who are gifted to impart information from the other side.
Well, I don't think there are necessarily rules, and I think that's a lot of the problem. For me, I like to work from an ethical standpoint. I'm not going to tell anybody something that they are then going to feel no hope. You know, I don't care what I receive from the other side. I have never received anything like that. I have never received any information about predicting anyone's death. My feeling on the death thing, and I think you and I have talked about this before offline, was, you know, I think that we get three dates. I think that there are three times that we have dates that we can choose to cross over if we want to check out. Okay, say that, you know, when we make our soul agreement on the other side before we incarnate into this life, sometimes we get off path. You know, we just do. There are addictions, there are wrong choices, there are wrong people that come into our lives, and we get off track. If we get off track and we become so unhappy or distraught or just feel like, okay, I can't fix this, then I think unconsciously, and I think this happens probably while we sleep, because I do believe that while we sleep, we are visiting with our spirit guides, and we are evaluating where we're at, and we are, you know, kind of just figuring where we're at out, you know, while we're sleeping. And I'm not saying it happens every night, but I think it happens fairly often. I think at that point we make an unconscious decision to, all right, one of the dates you picked was this day. Do you want this day? Do you want something to happen? Then, you know, that you can leave this earth and come back and start over, you know, start a new plan in a new body, whatever. And I think that if we make that choice, we can, at that point, we can go. On a certain date, we have a car accident, we have something horrible happen, that, you know, whether it's a violent death or whether we end up just, you know, falling off a building, I don't know, something can happen, you know. But then I think we have that final date, and the final date is basically our last. We don't get a choice on the final date. The final date is the day that we are meant to pass. This is a day that has been chosen for us to go. And so if we, you know, if we've chosen the other times not to go, then, you know, now what, you can't live forever. So at some point, you know, this is the day that you chose as your final date. This is how old you wanted to be, and, you know, this is the way you wanted to go or whatever. So unfortunately, some of us, you know, some of our dates are when we're very young. Some of our dates are when we can be very, very old. You know, it doesn't, I'm not going to pretend I know the rhyme or reason or the how, because I don't. I don't have all the answers, and I don't think I'm supposed to. I believe possibly a psychic could say, could pick up on when one of those dates are, like, as an option. I don't think there's anyone out there that can or should predict and tell the person that someone is going to die. I think that at that point, once somebody said that to them, they're going to shut down. They're going to be like, well, what's the point in doing this? I'm just going to die on this or that date. What's the point in, you know, and doing anything? So I don't like it. I don't think it's as ethical, and I don't care how good they are. I don't think that they can possibly be right, and I just don't agree that it's the right thing to do. So much about this is just doing the right thing, doing the ethical thing, and I see so many people in this business that don't do that, that don't use any kind of ethics. I've seen people say, oh, your husband's cheating on you. They don't know that for sure. I'm not saying don't, you know, be suspicious and not do some investigation, but you don't say, oh, this is going on. If I got information like that, I'd start asking questions about the marriage, and I'd start asking questions about, you know, do you have any suspicions? I'd start asking questions. But I'm certainly not going to just drop a bomb on this person's lap like that, you know?
Yeah. No, that makes perfect sense. And could it be, Lisa, like in the case of predicting somebody's death or really anything serious like what you just mentioned, maybe an affair, could it also have something to do with the person's state of mind at that time? Like maybe this person's been depressed and so maybe the person says to them, well, they can pick up on their maybe at that point that person is wishing unconsciously to take one of their optional exit ramps out. But maybe their circumstances change in the next couple of months and they meet somebody really great and all of a sudden they're happy and maybe their life is taking off. And so that could color what had happened in that, you know, that could change everything that psychic had seen in the reading that happened two months prior. Do you know what I mean? Like, could that...
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. I mean, they're not going to say, oh, okay, so six months from now is your date, so 6 months from now you're going to die. No, I think they're going to check in with you a bunch of times and make sure that you still want to take that exit date. You know, I don't see that. And again, this is all on a soul level. This doesn't have to mean that the person is even displaying incredible depression or feeling hopelessness or anything like that. It's what they decided as a soul they wanted to accomplish and whether or not they're on their way to accomplishing that. But I also believe that people who spend a lot of time handling things in a way that makes them unhappy, but they think they're doing it for the right reasons. You know, and I see this so much, like people who stay in relationships or marriages for the sake of the children, and I do my little hand quotes for that because I think the sake of the children is, you know, staying in a relationship for that reason is honorable, but it's a mistake because all your kids want is for you to be happy, and you want your kids to see you happy, and you want your kids to see a healthy relationship between, you know, the parents. You certainly don't want your children to... sit there and think, wow, when I grow up, I want a marriage like this. I mean, for God's sakes, I mean, you know, if you're not even sleeping in the same bedroom or the same, you know, you're not communicating or you're only fighting all the time, you don't want your kids to think that's a marriage, you know. So I see it with that sort of situation a lot. And I think that people that stay in those stuck situations, start to, even though they're still going about their lives and they think they're doing the right thing, I do think that they're getting off track on a soul level. And so they might make a decision like that. And I'm not just saying with marriage. I mean, this could be about 1,000 different things. It could be a job that they're doing that they hate, and they're doing it because it brings in the money, but it's not their dream job. It's not what they want to do. It could be because they're suppressing their life purpose. Your life purpose could be, and I just had a guest on the show, my show on Sunday, who is so awesome. She did such, I just love talking to her. She was actually on 2 weeks in a row because I just love her that much. And we were talking a lot about, about your life purpose. And sometimes that life purpose can just be to do something, to volunteer doing something or to maybe have, maybe there's a creative side of you that's not being embraced. It doesn't mean you're supposed to be singing, to 10,000 people in Madison Square Garden, but it does, but it does mean that you're supposed to learn how to play the guitar or something, I mean, so you're,
yeah.
it could be something that just completes you, something so small that just completes your destiny. And I don't like the word destiny either, but it just completes your purpose. It just rounds you, it makes you happy on all levels. And so many times I think that we end up in a situation where we're just stuck, and we suppress that we're suppressing whatever it is that could round us out and finally make us happy, and it happens all the time. I see it all the time.
Yeah, it's sad. It really is. And I want to talk to you, Lisa, I think this might tie in with the next topic I wanted to discuss, but you alluded to it before, and that's reincarnation, because I want to talk a little bit about what that means for anybody that may not know or understand, but I think that ties in with life purpose from what I know about it. And just to give you an example, I mean, one of my best friends, her, it was so sad, back in 2006, her 5-year-old nephew developed a brain tumor and was gone in 10 months. And, a lot of the things in reaction to that, most of us say on this side, well, what was the point of that? It's so senseless. Why would God do something like this? And so I think when you think of it in terms of reincarnation, though, it starts to make a little bit more sense. So can we talk about how that works, how you make the agreement before you come here, and what's involved with that?
Yeah, absolutely. When it comes to why children suffer in any way, shape, or form, I'm sorry, but I am never going to understand that as long as I'm in human form. Even as a psychic, I cannot tell you why that happens. I don't know. I can tell you that I believe there's a reason, but I can't make sense out of it. I'm a mom. I'm an aunt. I can't wrap my head around that at all. I don't understand it, and the human in me just rejects it as there being any reason for it. Not only their death, but their suffering in general. I just don't understand whether it's from illness, abuse, neglect, whatever. It makes me sick, and I can't, I can't even comprehend it. But the way reincarnation works, basically, we are all souls, and souls have their own energy. Our souls are energy, and we all know the concept of energy not being able to be created or die. So the only person that creates a soul would be God. And God created, I believe he still creates new souls. Every once in a while, I'll see a pretty new soul walk into my office, or, I'll get a pretty new soul. I can usually tell within a couple of seconds of talking to the person, maybe a minute, whether they're an old soul or a newer soul. But basically what it is, we're all these energy beings, and we all are in the spiritual realm. That's where we're created. And we choose a life. We choose our parents. We choose our path. We set a path, and we're trying to basically we're trying to learn. We're trying to grow our soul.
Lisa, are you there? Are you there, Lisa?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Sorry, I cut out for a minute. Okay, you're back.
Okay, good, good, good. I don't know what it's like. I said I was having trouble with Skype on Sunday too. I don't know if it's Skype or what, but anyway. What did you hear last? What was I saying?
So you choose your parents, your life circumstances from the other side as a soul, as an energy being, and you make this agreement with God ahead of time before you before you're born.
You have spirit guides and you have a spirit family, and these are the people that you consistently reincarnate with. And when we're planning our lessons, basically, are the lessons that we need to learn, the lessons that we need to learn to become more like God, to become closer to Godlike. And so when we're doing that, we have a plan, and this is what the lesson we're going to learn in our lifetime. That's not okay. You're going to grow up, and okay, you're going to be born into this family, and you're going to go to school, and you're going to become a doctor or a lawyer or whatever, and you're going to get married, and you're going to have three kids. Those are all choices that develop as things are going. The bottom line is what we're doing is we're trying to decide what lessons we're going to learn, and then as we go, we figure out how we're going to decide how we're going to learn those lessons. So I think that's a really important distinction when it comes to, destiny, because I've never been a big fan of the word destiny because I think it's a nice enough word, but I don't really believe that we have a certain destiny, that this is the way everything's supposed to work out. I think we fulfill our destiny by learning our lessons, and that's means that we learn the lessons, and however we learn the lessons. I don't think it means that we become this, we do this for a living and marry this certain person and have this many kids and, all of that. I think it depends. Sometimes one of your things may be to, have a child that becomes something amazing, that becomes something that someone who changes the world, but that would be, that would be a specific goal that we've already created for ourselves on the other side as part of what our plan is going to be.
Right. And, something you said too reminded me, first let me just say the word destiny to me seems to negate the whole notion of having free will. Like when I think of destiny, it seems to me like it's like, okay, well, this is it. No matter what you do, you're going to end up at the same place, which doesn't make any sense if God gives us all free will.
Absolutely. I agree.
And then, so the concept you mentioned that we incarnate with, I think you said soul families, because I'm curious because, we all have the experience in life where we're especially close to certain people, whether it's a brother, a mother, a cousin, a friend, and you seem to have that, when you have that feeling of somebody like, oh, wow, I feel like I've known you my whole life, somebody you're meeting for the first time. Is that what you mean by soul family? That, we come back with certain people into these different lifetimes?
Yeah, I think that we have a group of people that we are working with on the other side that it's just like our families here. The size of the family can be different. I mean, I've heard all kinds of different definitions of what the size of a soul family is. I think it's very different. The term soulmates is one of the ones that I think is most confusing, because a soulmate does not mean that this is the person you're supposed to marry. We have lots of soulmates, and these soulmates are basically just people that we know in spirit form. So when you meet them, and the interesting thing about knowing whether or not you have a soulmate is the second you meet them, you feel a strong emotion for. Sometimes that emotion most of the time it's just like, wow, I have such a connection with this person. Sometimes it can be like, boy, I really dislike this person.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And it's just the same thing, because maybe you've had some bad incarnations with that person and you're working on trying to fix that, which is why you keep repeating your life with the same person. So, and a lot of times that can be a relative. That can be a mother or a father or a sister or a brother or whatever. And you just, there's just something about them that you don't like, that you don't.
Mm-hmm.
You don't feel, you may love them, but there's something about them you just don't really like. And that can be a soulmate just as easily as can someone who you meet and you're like starstruck, oh my God, I can't believe that I've met this person. This is a perfect person for me. Yeah, that's a soulmate too. And I also believe that soulmates are sometimes only supposed to be here for a period of our lives. that we're not supposed to be with them forever and ever and ever. You know, that they can be somebody who's here, who's part of your life for a period of time, and then they can, you know, and they make a huge difference in your life, but then you kind of outgrow each other.
Mm-hmm.
And you can need to transition from that relationship. I think that's what a lot of times happens with, you know, people that that end up having a failed marriage. It doesn't mean that you weren't supposed to marry that person. It doesn't mean that you weren't supposed to have children with that person. It just means that you outgrew each other soul wise. You know, you can learn your lessons better being outside of that relationship. You know, and so it's a little complicated, but see, I always think it's like total common sense, and everybody looks at me like I have three heads when I say that, but I'm like, it's kind of obvious to me because I've kind of just always understood this. You know, so many of these weird things that I was just kind of, in my book, I talk about how I used to sit on my grandparents' lap, and they were big Bible people, and they would read me the Bible all the time, and I could be like 6 years old and be like, that's not true, Grandma.
And what was her reaction like when you say that?
Oh my gosh, it was not good. It was not good. They'd be like, you're questioning God's word, and I'm like, yeah. You know, I mean, I didn't know what I was doing by saying that, but I was just like, no, this isn't, God's not like that. Jesus isn't like that. You know, this is not how that happened. You know, and I would sit there and I knew, and oh my gosh, my poor parents. I'd come home from my grandparents' house, and my grandmother would be like, your daughter, there's something wrong with her. And my parents just like were shrugging it off and being like, hey, she's allowed to have her own opinion, you know, she's allowed to feel what she feels. And, you know, this was way before anybody even knew about my, you know, I didn't even talk about my ability to see angels with people. It was a private thing that I, you know, that I kept to myself. So, you know, I mean, I'm sure I mentioned it to my parents here and there, but I it's not something that, it wasn't something that was bizarre to me, and I was very outspoken about it, as I still am. However, I did learn after about 6 or 7 years old to shut my mouth because it was getting me in trouble with my grandparents.
You learned how to be tactful.
I stopped questioning the literary reading of the Bible because, you know, you get to, some people really believe every word of the Bible, and me, I'm like, I'm not saying that didn't happen. I'm just saying that's not the way it happened. You know, that, you know, it didn't happen that way. That wasn't the reason God did this or something like that, you know. But when you have grandparents that follow Billy Graham like he's God, you don't question them.
Yeah. Well,
you know?
Funny. Well, I was raised Catholic, which many other denominations of Christianity don't even consider Christian. And I was always taught that certain things in the Bible were true, but most of them were stories to illustrate a larger point or a bigger lesson type of thing.
Well,
so that's how I always looked at it.
I think that's unusual for you know, somebody raised Catholic. I always thought that Catholics always kind of believed more in the every word in the Bible than anyone. But see, I'm not Catholic, so I don't know. I've never got, like I said, I was raised Methodist. I was baptized Methodist, but my parents weren't, like, you know, we were the hypocrites that went to the church on Easter Sunday and on Christmas Eve. You know, we didn't really go every Sunday. I mean, once in a while, my mom would get on a little kick or something and we'd have to go for a few weeks in a row. But for the most part, you know, we didn't have to do that. And I never got anything out of church, really. To me, it was just like something you had to do on Sunday. And I didn't really, I mean, I guess like in Sunday school and things like that, I did learn the stories of the Bible, you know, and I think that was beneficial because I do think it's part of, you know, part of theology, it's part of religion, and we need to know the stories. But other than that, I really never, as an adult, I never really got that much out of it, so I've never really gone. With my kids, when I raised my kids, they just had a very weird thing about church. They never liked church. And I started doing something which we called Spiritual Sunday. And what I would do is I would have a different topic, and I'd talk about it every Sunday, a different something, whether it was angels or whether it was Buddhism or whether it was Judaism or Catholicism or, you know, whatever. I would talk about some religion, and my point was, you know, when you guys are old enough, you choose. You choose what resonates with you. I'm not shoving you know, Christianity or any kind of religion down your throat. You choose whatever fits for you. If it's just a general spirituality like I chose, that's okay. You know, it's whatever resonates with you.
Yeah, and I think, you know, with a lot of things, unfortunately, I think, how do I say this diplomatically, because I don't want to offend anyone, but I just think, look, I was born and raised Catholic. We went to church every Sunday. I went all through Catholic school. I just feel like whether it's Catholic or whatever the denomination is or whatever the religion is, there's always that human element that kind of, I don't want to say screws things up, but it kind of taints things too. So what I'm saying is I kind of agree with you that I feel much closer to God when I just take my time to pray on my own. And that might involve reading a passage from the Bible. It might just involve talking to God on my own. But I just feel like that's, for me, that's a better way to achieve that relationship than going to a building every week where, let's face it, a lot of people, at least in my experience, and again, this is going to sound so judgmental, but a lot of people are just there to be seen, and or they're there because they think it's the right thing to do. And God bless them. I'm not putting them down for that, but I totally understand where you're coming from. I guess it's my long-winded way of saying that.
And I always tell people, if you're getting something out of going to church, absolutely go to church. I mean, if you're really getting something out of it, even if it's just something social, you know, even if it is just the being seen and talking to the group of people that you enjoy being with on Sunday, you know, Sunday morning or whatever or whenever you go, that's great. Go, absolutely. I just don't think you criticize people that don't live that way. I have never gotten anything out of it. I mean, yes, I've gone to some services, and Catholic services are one of my favorites because they're so ritualistic. You know,
yeah,
there's
so
much ritualism in them, and I love that. I absolutely love that. So, you know, I've gone to some baptisms of adults that were just beautiful. I mean, the ceremony involved, those things, yeah, I got something out of. So I never don't. Like, I'm not, like, anti-church. I just don't go to church on a regular basis. I go for special occasions when somebody, you know, for a baptism, a wedding, for whatever, you know, whatever it happens to be. And usually I get something positive out of it because there's a reason for me to be there. I don't know. I just don't need somebody picking a sermon and talking to me about that subject and talking to a room of how many other people talking about that subject and it necessarily resonate with me at that point in my life. But some people it does. A lot of people that go to church tell me, you know, it feels like every week the minister or the priest or whatever is talking directly to me because this is exactly what I needed to hear, exactly what I needed to understand. Well, God bless you. That's great. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, you're meant to go to church, you know. Obviously, you're getting something out of it, and I think that's great. I just don't think that we put down that anybody should put down the people that don't get something out of it because not everyone does.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that, and you're absolutely right. If you get something out of going to church, by all means, go. But if for you your relationship with God is strengthened by doing your own thing at home on Sundays or every day in prayer, that's great too. I wish that everybody was like that though. You know, I wish same courtesy.
I agree. My thing is that I worship God every day with the way I try to live my life. That's my way of worshiping
right.
God. Not going to a certain building on Sunday. That to me is not my way of worshiping God. My way of worshiping God and what I believe God wants me to do is to live my life in a way that I'm helping as many people as I can and doing my best to raise my kids and be a good mom and be a good wife and be a good person. And if I'm doing that, then that is me worshiping God because I'm doing what God would want me to do. This is what God wants me to do. I'm sure He'd be thrilled if I'd go to church on Sunday. I'm not saying that God wouldn't approve. I'm just saying that I just don't feel like I need to do that in order to worship God. You know, I think I do it every single day of my life. I pray. I am thankful and grateful for everything I have. I'm not saying I don't sometimes want more because of course everybody does. That's human nature, you know. But I am grateful for everything I have, and I thank God and the angels and all the spirits, my spirit guides, for their incredible grace that they've bestowed on me. Absolutely. Every day.
Awesome. So, Lisa, you know, let's get into talking about the angels, because I'd love to get into, you know, we hear about, okay, there's guardian angels, there are the archangels. Can we talk a little bit about, first of all, let's just define what angels are, just in case anybody out there, you know, everybody's heard of angels, but I would love to define, you know, what they are and what their purpose is, and then maybe kind of go through the different types of angels that are out there or that exist.
Sure. The angels are basically, and this is what gets complicated for people, and I can actually make this pretty simple. People don't die and become angels. That's pretty much a rule, but I'm not saying it's never a rule that has been broken. We know in the Bible of two people that walk the earth that did become angels. I think it can happen. I don't think it happens very often. I believe that they can become. I think that those people become saints. And like Mother Teresa and things like that, I think that they get to Jesus and, they become either a saint or an ascended master or something like that, because they've just reached a level that most of us cannot even fathom. But angels are basically beings created as messengers of God. So they are here to kind of be God's, let's say, kind of like his voicemail. Okay. So all the messages that we're constantly, you know, to all the prayers that we're saying, the angels are the ones that hear it, and then they can, if they need to, take it to God, take the prayer to God. Other times they can handle the situation on their own. Angels, they're just messengers of God that are with us every day of our lives, and can and this is a big distinction, can only interfere in our lives with our express permission. And that comes back to the law of free will. So when you have an angel that, if you're asking for help, the angels are going to help you always, always. It's not always going to be in the exact way you want, you know, which is why I always tell people when you pray, if you're going to pray, if you're going to ask angels for help, if you're going to pray to God or the angels or to whomever, after you do that, you have to release the issue. If you keep trying to control the issue, then you're basically fighting for dominance with the angels, and it becomes very difficult for them to help you. So when we pray to the messengers of God, the angels, and we ask for assistance in a certain situation, we should then just release it. Just say, you know, you're trusting that the angels are going to take care of the problem. We should never define how it should be taken care of. You know, people like, well, this is the outcome I want, so make this happen. Well, you're not always going to get the outcome you want, but you're going to get the outcome that best serves you. So angels are like the big term, messengers of God, okay? So then we have guardian angels, and we each have a guardian angel or two that are assigned to our lives. Usually they follow us from incarnation to incarnation, so they're with us for multiple lives. And they're the ones that that basically watch over us, make sure that we're on our path, make sure that we're safe, make sure they're that little poke, you know, in your gut when you're like, oh, this doesn't feel right. You know what I mean? When you have that,
I've had that.
Yeah, me too. I have that all the time. So they're the ones that are doing that because they're just kind of trying to get your attention. But at the same time, they're not going to interfere. The guardian angels have one exception, and the exception for guardian angels is if your life is in danger, they are allowed to interfere to save your life, you know, because that's basically their job, and they're allowed to do that without your permission. So that's the only time an angel is really allowed to break the law of free will, because you're that's, you know, accidents happen. People do stupid things in the car, and all of a sudden you're in the middle of a mess, and, you know, it can become, but we've all experienced this too, because, you know, if you ever had something happen, like when you're driving, and I always use driving as a great example, because I think we've all experienced this. If you've ever been driving down the road, and all of a sudden, you know, you're sliding on ice, or a car comes into you, you know, comes towards you, and you don't even remember how you got there, but all of a sudden you're safely parked on the side of the road.
Mm-hmm. I've had that experience.
Yes, me too. And I think a lot of people have. You don't remember doing anything because you really didn't. The angels took, you know, it's like that Carrie Underwood song, Jesus Take the Wheel, only literal this time. They actually do make you safe. They actually keep you safe and move you out of harm's way. So that would be a good example of what an angel is allowed to do for you without your express permission. I mean, obviously, if you had time, you'd be like, oh, angels, please help me. But most of the time, you're just like, holy crap, there's
a
car
coming. Yeah, and that second. Well, Lisa, let me ask you, though. They can interfere only if it's not your third exit point, right? I mean,
if it were that final time, well, then they're not going to interfere because this is the way it was meant to, you know, to happen. You know, I'll give an example in my own personal life that this was a very difficult time. This was the loss of my mom. My mom died 5 years ago. And my mom was not a psychic person. She was not a religious person. She wasn't sure what to believe. And that was very odd for me, being who I am. You know, it was difficult for me. But the last year of her life, the last couple years of her life, she started going to church. It was a Unity church. It wasn't a...
Oh, I know Unity. I've been to the night club.
Okay. I wish we had more of them, because I
have a great one down here in Delray.
Yeah, there's one. The closest one I think I have to me is Reading, Pennsylvania, but I'm not sure. But the one my parents went to was amazing, and she started doing that because, again, she wasn't really focused on any religion. She was just focused on trying to comprehend and understand more. And so that was the last couple years of her life. The last year of her life, she started asking me questions, and she would ask me, "Well, but what do you believe about this? What do you believe about that?" And a lot of it was afterlife stuff. And I'd be like, wow, my mom's getting deep finally, you know. She's getting deep here. This is really cool. And so I'd have conversations with her. And then she had a bad knee. And she had already had, you know, some little surgery on it and everything. It ended up she needed a knee replacement. And she called me the last couple of months of her life before the surgery. She kept calling me, and she'd say, Lisa, I just want you to know you've been an incredible daughter. I've had a fantastic life. I have had more than I ever thought I would have. Please don't grieve for me too hard.
Wow.
I know.
And like she knew.
And I'm like, what are you talking about? She goes, I don't think I'm going to survive this surgery. And I said, Mom, I'm like, you've had back surgery. You've had your gallbladder taken out, your appendix taken out. You've had a hysterectomy. She had had so many major surgeries, you know. And I'm like, why in the world would you be worried about knee surgery? This isn't like open heart surgery. You're not having a bypass or a heart lung transplant, or I don't know. And she'd be like, I don't know. I just have this really strange feeling. So after about the third or fourth time that she did this, you know, called me, and it was always a random call out of the blue as it got closer and closer to the date, I said, Mom, please, just reschedule the surgery. You're starting to scare me. If you're really having this kind of a feeling, I would like you to reschedule it and try and wrap your mind around what's going on here. We need to figure out why you're having this. And she said, I can't. I have to do it. And so she was 68 years old, and she was in great health. She just lost a bunch of weight. She was very active, you know, with friends and everything. And she had the surgery, got through the surgery. I talked to her one time. She was having a lot of trouble breathing, and she was in a lot of pain that day. It was the day after the surgery. And 2 days after that, I got a phone call from my dad that she had been taken to ICU and was in an induced coma.
Oh my God.
I told my dad she has something called ARDS. I know it. And I'd never heard of it before, but I started researching it on the internet. And when I saw the words, I'm like, that's it. Oh, my God, that's what she has. So he mentioned it to the doctors. The doctors biopsied her lungs, and sure enough, she had ARDS. And ARDS is a very difficult thing. It has a very small survival rate. So anyway, we ended up flying down to Florida where they lived, and she died about 2 weeks after the surgery. And I looked at that and thought about, you know, what had happened, and I was very angry. You know, I think, you know, that's one of the stages of grief. I was very angry. My mom was my best friend, and I and she was so full of life, and I was like, what a silly thing to die from, you know? I was just, it's just, I mean, there was nothing wrong with her, you know, she had a bad knee. And then I ended up really, I was very angry for a while, and I wouldn't do readings. I wouldn't touch my pendulum, you know, which is one of the tools I use for readings a lot. I wouldn't touch my cards, nothing. I wanted nothing to do with anything about, you know, what I believe. And then I got to the point where I'm like, my God, she predicted this. She knew this was going to happen. This was her. She had no other choice. This was her third time. This was that final time that had been chosen for her ahead of time, and she knew it on a soul level. She knew that she didn't have a choice, and that's how she was able to say to me, you know, I have to go through with this surgery. I can't put it off. I have to do it, because she knew she had no choice. So that was a very personal, and I'd always believed, you know, in what I talked about with the three times, you know, and the and all of that, but this gave me this was my wake up call to be like, wow, I just had it proven, you know. This was just proven that that my mom had no control. If she could have, she would have chosen to stay. I know that, you know. She loved her life too much, but
So she had made this agreement ahead of, before she even came to Earth, that when I'm 68, this is what's going to happen, and this knee surgery is going to be my exit ramp back to the other side, you know, out of that life. Okay.
Yep, and had it not been, and this is what I said to my dad afterwards and things, he's like, if she just wouldn't have had the knee surgery, if she just wouldn't have gained the weight that made the knee go bad, and the, you know, I mean, all these different things. And I said, Dad, you know what, then maybe she would have got hit by a bus, you know? If it was her, I mean, that's a horrible thing to say, but the point is that it was her time, and that was when she was supposed to go. And however it's supposed to happen, if we avoid it, if we know ahead of time, you know, like we were talking about earlier about your friend that had the death prediction, if we know ahead of time and we don't want to go, we're going to try and avoid that, you know, that situation. And the bottom line is, you know, something else is going to happen. It just is. If it's your time, it's just your time.
Right. Yeah. Now, Lisa, you were not able to, and this is what's interesting to me, that you never picked up on that with your mom. Like, she was feeling it and sensing it.
Yeah.
It sounds like it was something you were unable to pick up on spiritually or psychically.
Yeah, I actually, it was really a very strange situation, because in hindsight, looking back, the bottom line is, I used the pendulum a lot back in those days, and my pendulum, I kept saying, is my mom going to die from ARDS? Is this what's going to kill her? Is she going to die? And my pendulum kept saying, no, 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 no. And I was so angry when she died, because I'm like, it lied to me. It's never lied to me before. It's always been accurate. And then I had another psychic friend of mine who said, Lisa, you do understand that you completely, your emotions completely manipulated that reading, that what your mind, your emotions controlled the pendulum. And I started understanding it, because I thought, the last thing I wanted to do was accept the idea of my mom dying. I was fighting it with everything I had. I could not imagine my mom, so full of life, so full of energy, so in control of absolutely everything, her dying. I couldn't imagine life without her. So I wasn't able to read it. And that's when I learned that I can't read for myself, because if the emotions are attached, if my emotions are attached, even with friends, I find this difficult now. I have to detach myself so that, because if I care, you know, it's like having a dog in the race. You know what I mean? If you have a dog
yeah.
in the race, you're going to, you know, it's going to be a little bit of a different, it's going to be a little difficult for you to control it. So I have to completely detach myself when I'm doing the reading. Now, looking back, I remember seeing my mom, I remember coming into the room and I feel, wow, my mom's soul's not in there anymore. She's gone.
Wow.
And then I all of a sudden I'd be like looking at her and I'm like, oh, she's back. You know, so I felt her coming and going, you know, coming and going. And it was, it was just one of the things where I didn't accept what was going on. She was transitioning, but I was kind of just like, you know, I just figured, well, she's probably just taking a little break from her, you know, her soul's doing something else. I would not accept, you know, what was happening. And so, yeah, that's what makes it so difficult for psychics to read for themselves. And you'll hear this a lot. A lot of psychics will tell you, I can't read for myself. That's why we go to other psychics, because the bottom line is that, you know, that if our emotions are attached to it, we can completely manipulate what comes into play and whether it comes to us through a tool like, you know, a divination tool like my pendulum or a card reading or whatever, we can control it, you know, with our minds. And, you know, that's kind of what I did.
Yeah, now I'm sure it sounds like that also applies to, because you mentioned friends, but I would think it would also apply to anybody you're close to, like your children, your husband, that you're not able to read them for that same reason, that you're too close to the situation emotionally.
It depends on what the situation is. You know, sometimes, I mean, I've been able to do things like, you know, I knew when my son, for instance, when he was up to no good one time, and he made up this phony story and about how he had to go do something or other. And I'm like, oh, no, no. And I told him exactly what he was doing. And his jaw dropped to the floor. He's like, how do you know that? He couldn't even lie anymore because he was so stunned that not only did I know that he was lying, but I knew exactly what he was going to go do. So, you know, like things like that I can still get with my family. But when it comes to the emotional stuff, no, I don't even try anymore because I know I can't detach myself. I care too much, you know, and when you care, and it's hard. I mean, you know, I care about my clients too, a lot, ridiculously a lot, you know, I really do. So when they come to me, I have to learn, I've had to practice detaching myself, especially my regulars that come often. But, you know, when it comes to people that I love that have been in my life for, you know, years and years and years, my family, you can't detach. You just can't.
Yeah, well, that's understandable. Completely. Lisa, you mentioned something earlier we were talking about, and I wanted to get your take on this, because I have a friend who believes that, going in a different direction now, but I have a friend who believes that when we go to sleep at night, that our souls get bored. So they do go back to the other side, and they're hanging out with maybe their loved ones who've passed on or whoever, and then because they're bored and they don't have anything to do while you're sleeping, but that they're not allowed then, whatever they might pick up over there, that they're not necessarily allowed to impart that knowledge when they come back into the body. What do you make of that, and is that true? And I mean, when we remember a dream, like, I'll just give you an example, because the last three or four nights I have had these very vivid dreams about a great aunt of mine that I was very close to, who was a wonderful, loving woman. And she died in 2006, and I never dreamed of her until, like, this past week. And I've dreamt of her now, like, four nights in a row. And they're very clear, vivid dreams. And I'm trying to understand, like, why all of a sudden this is happening. So I know I threw a lot of questions at you in one sentence, but...
Yeah, that actually, I'm not sure about the bored thing. I'm not sure if our souls get bored or not. I think that while we sleep, they automatically go to the other side. I think that they go to the other side to, like I said before, reassess what's going on in our lives with our spirit guides. I know for a fact that I have visited with my mom in my sleep, and no, I could not bring back the memories. So I totally believe that's true. I could not remember the actual visit. However, what I would wake up with this incredible closeness to my mom. Like, I would wake up and I'd be like, my mom's here. You know, like she was
Aww.
In the room. Like she was actually just sitting next to me, because I had just finished visiting with her. So when I woke up, I felt that incredible closeness to her. It's happened with, you know, other people who have passed on that I cared about. And I think that that's a very common occurrence. We're not allowed to bring back the memories, I think, because, you know, this comes down to a basic level of us moving on with our lives. And I think this is the reason, you know, in all these years, in the 5 years my mom's been gone, she's never come to me. I have people that I do readings for, and I'm talking to their deceased loved ones, you know, and I've never had a conversation with my mom. But I believe that the reason for that is that if I did, I don't think I could really heal. I don't think that I could really learn to move on, you know, that I would ever really get through the grieving process. Because I remember saying to myself, okay, well, Mom, when we found out she was definitely going to die, I remember saying, okay, so our relationship will change now, Mom. You can still come to me and talk to me, and it'll be different because you won't actually be there in person, but you'll be there in spirit, and I'll be able to talk to you. And then that didn't happen. And I remember thinking, what the heck, you know? I thought everybody else said, you know, why not my mom? And then I think because I understood it. You know, when you're in the middle of the deep grief, it's hard to understand. But once I wasn't in that deep grief place anymore, I was able to actually kind of just get it and understand that with her, you know, because she passed and because of the fact that I have the abilities that I have, I think that I would have stayed stuck because she was such a huge, huge part of my life. I mean, she was just, you know, I didn't do anything without consulting with my mom first, you know. And so, you know, I couldn't continue to do that. I had to become the matriarch of this family. I had to take over a new role. And how could I do that if I was still constantly going, you know, and asking my mom, you know, her opinion or whatever. So as difficult as that was, it just was what it was. You know, I started to understand why it was working that way. I think that I definitely think that we do visit with the other side in our sleep, and I think that that is a very common occurrence, and I think that we're supposed to do that. I think that that's where our souls go. Our bodies are resting. Our souls don't rest, you know. So our souls are going to do something while we're sleeping. So they're going to usually check in on the other side, I think.
Yeah, now when you dream of somebody so vividly that's passed on, let's say, and it's really clear and maybe you dream about them several nights in a row, is that a soul thing, or how would you define that? Like, is that your soul visiting, and that's maybe the fragments that you're allowed to remember from that visit? Or
yeah, I find like when I do dream about something that involves my mom, it's always bizarre because it'll be something like she's dead, but not really dead. It's always bizarre. The dreams are always very bizarre. It's like. Like she's there, but she's supposed to be dead, so I can't tell anybody that she's there. It's weird. I mean, it's just I think dreams are bizarre anyway. Doing dream analysis that's one of the things I had to study for my bachelor's degree, and I was so excited because I thought it was going to be my favorite course. It was the most complicated course I think I've ever taken, ever. It was horrible. It was so complicated because dream analysis there's a lot that's involved with dream analysis. And the other common dream I have that involves my mom is me going back to like my childhood home or trying to find my childhood home because I know my mom is there. And so I'm trying to find my way back to my childhood home. So there's, you know, there are all these different, you know, things that happen in our dreams. And yeah, I'll recall those things. I'll remember those things. I might even have a conversation with my mom in those dreams, but it's not a current conversation. It's not something that necessarily makes any sense. I think it's just something where I'm missing her and I'm, you know, I just like all dreams, you know, there's just, you know, she's just one of the things I need to acknowledge subconsciously and look at, you know, something she maybe taught me or something that I need to remember. I'm really bad at remembering the details from yesterday, let alone, 30 years ago. So, once in a while, it'll trigger something and I'll remember something that I did with, that we did as a family or that, I did with my mom. And it'll just bring back some memories. And I think sometimes she wants me to remember something that I don't, and that's why I'll have that specific dream. I think that's different. I don't think that's us crossing over to the other side. I don't think that that's our souls leaving and visiting. It just happens to be the dream we're having that involves that person.
Right. It almost sounds like dreams are more of a psychological phenomenon than a spiritual one.
Yeah, I think that they are. I think that it's just, our brains have to keep going, and this is one of the misconceptions with meditation. People think, well, I can't blank my mind out. Well, nobody can blank their mind out. It's impossible. Your brain has to be thinking. Your brain has to be thinking. That's its job. And you can't shut it off, So even in our sleep, we can't shut it off. Our souls can go and move on. There are things like astral projection and traveling and, traveling through space and time while you're dreaming. That's your soul. That's on a soul level. A dream is a different thing. A dream is just your body's way, your mind's way of working something out that you can't seem to work out in a waking state.
Interesting. And it seems like, at least for me, and it seems like kind of like what you were saying at the beginning of the interview about getting things maybe in symbols when you're reading somebody, it almost seems like at the dream level things work that way. At least for me, it's like I find myself trying to figure out, it's not so much the literal dream, but it seems like there's symbolism in there that I'm supposed to piece together to get the message.
Yeah, and that's exactly right. The symbols usually have the symbols in a dream. Okay, so you have a dream about, in the dream, one of the main symbols is, a beach. Say a beach. You're on this beach. That does mean something specifically, but then you have to work out, this is what becomes so complicated with dream interpretation, is the symbol does mean something. What the things that are that are around you in that dream, they do have a reason for being there, but that can be different for my dream than your dream. Even though we both dream of a beach, that doesn't mean that it means the same exact thing for both of our lives. It means that we both need to address an issue regarding whatever the definition of that beach is. And I don't remember what a beach symbol means, but I could look it up. But anyway, if it does, whatever it means, then we have to, we're addressing different situations because your life and what you're going through is different than my life and what I'm going through at this very moment.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it seems to me that dreams are very specific to each individual, and there's so many variables involved that you can't. It's not a one size fits all thing by any means.
No, it's absolutely true. It's just everybody's working out different things, and there are things that we just don't have answers to, or that we don't even acknowledge are issues while we're awake. We're all busy. We're just doing what we do. We're just trying to get through our days. But a lot of times we're missing out on something that's pretty important, something that matters, and we're missing out on it because we're just so busy, we're just so busy trying to pay the bills and raise the kids and, do our jobs and be good people. And so we miss out on something that our soul needs us to acknowledge. Something that our soul needs fed, and that goes back to your life purpose. If you're not addressing a creative side that's inside of you that's meant to be addressed, you're going to have issues from that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. It really does. Now, Lisa, we talked about angels. I want to, and you mentioned spirit guides earlier. So let's define for everyone listening what a spirit guide is and what the difference is between a spirit guide and an angel, and maybe between a spirit guide and a loved one who's passed on.
Right. Well, for me, the energy is always very different. An angel has a certain energy to it, and I feel like when an angel comes into the room, I feel a certain energy. It's like a frequency. When an archangel comes in, it's a really super high frequency. And the archangels are basically the boss of the angels. You know, they're the ones that control certain aspects. You know, certain things like Archangel Michael is for protection, and you know, there are all Gabriel for healing. There are just all these Raphael for healing. There are all these different angels that have different archangels that have different purposes, and then there are a bunch of angels that basically that they work with under them. When it comes to spirit, and like I mentioned before, angels have never been human. They've never walked the earth in human form. Almost exclusively, they have never done that. There are rare exceptions. Spirit guides most of the time. They were human. They did their incarnations, and their next step was to choose to be a spirit guide and guide other people who are living the human earthly experience right now. So they're basically just there to help the people on earth, the people, you know, in human form or whatever form, to kind of stay on their path, to make sure that the lessons they're supposed to learn, that they're learning. So that would be a spirit guide. My spirit guide, you know, I have a few spirit guides, but the main one I work with, she's the one that helps me during my reading. She's the one that I get so many messages through. And she a lot of times will talk to the person that I'm reading spirit guide, and then I get information from both of them. So that's kind of cool. And spirit guides have a different frequency to them as well. For me, deceased loved ones have their frequency is usually the lowest of the frequencies, and that doesn't mean it's a bad thing. It's just the way it comes through to me. They come through, and in my office when I'm sitting at my desk, it's so funny because everybody comes in at a different place. The angel or my spirit guide stands next to me, like right. Directly next to me. Angels and archangels, especially archangels, come in at the very, very high corner of my office to my left. Deceased loved ones come in to my left, but behind the person that is sitting across from me. Mm-hmm. So it's the way that they, you know, it's where they come in. I feel their energy come from. Rarely do I see them, but sometimes I will get flashes in my head of what scenery. Like if somebody, you know, wants to know how did this person die, what happened? You know, we found them here, but I don't understand what happened. I'll get the flashes. The deceased loved one will send me the flashes, and I'll see the pictures and of exactly what happened. But they're basically just our deceased people, the people around us, the people that we love, the people that we care about that are in our lives that pass on. And I never, ever advertise that I can do medium work when it comes to deceased loved ones because it is not up to me. They come through or they don't. You know, sometimes a reading will end up being all about a deceased person. Other times a reading, you know, I won't get anything about someone, you know, anyone that's passed in their lives. Sometimes it's because there's no one that's really passed that they were that close to, but other times I think it's just because that doesn't need to be a focus of the reading. I don't control what the reading's about. You know, the spirit guides and the angels control what the reading is about, and they're going to tell me what you need to know at that point in your life. So,
does the person who's passed on, so they have the free will, it sounds like, if they know, let's say their daughter's coming to you for a reading, they have the free will to decide, hey, I think I'll show up for a little while or not. Is that true, or do they have to, do the angels have the final say in whether or not this person is permitted to come through? You know what I'm saying, for the highest good of that person having the reading?
I don't believe so. I've never seen that. What I usually see is a lot of times there's a message, you know, but a lot of times, like, the deceased level will just will have a message for the person. A lot of times, like, sometimes it'll be about, you know, maybe they want to talk about, want to make sure that they know something or that they get some kind of, I've had so many times where a spirit will come through and be like, make sure she or he gets this, meaning like a piece of jewelry or some kind of sentimental thing that was important to the deceased person, and they want to make sure that this other person, you know, that the person that's coming in gets that, is in possession of that item. But a lot of times they come in and they just want to say, you're loved, I'm okay, I am here, I have not died. I mean, yes, my body is no longer here, but my soul lives on. I'm with you, I'm watching over you, and you can talk to me anytime you want, you know. Most of the time they just want to say that, you know, sometimes they have an apology because of, you know, the way they live their lives, and then they believe they let somebody, you know, the person down. You know, there are so many different messages that come through. I think that they choose whether or not they're coming through, and I believe that a lot of that is determined by if they feel the person needs to hear from them. You know, sometimes just because it's just for comfort, you know, just for comfort.
Yep. No, that makes a lot of sense. And Lisa, I want to talk to you, too, about another definition, because I think a lot of people get confused between what a ghost is. And I know you've interviewed people that deal with the paranormal realm on your show, Just Believe. But just for the purposes of defining it here, how does a ghost differ from a spirit? And why? And I feel like we should feel sorry for them, but I'll let you maybe offer your definition and then we can talk about it. But.
Well, a ghost, a spirit's crossed over. A spirit is living its life on the other side. It's living its afterlife, I like to say. Safely, securely, and most situations happily on the other side. Many times, either resting, playing, you know, whatever, and before they start planning the next incarnation. So, you know, that's what a spirit. It's a spirit that has just already crossed over, and everything is hunky dory, and, you know, for the spirit. A ghost is a spirit also, but it gets stuck. It doesn't cross over. A ghost can, for lots of different reasons, and there are multiple reasons that a ghost could not cross over. Sometimes they have unfinished business, meaning there's something that they need to say, they didn't say, something they feel like they need to do that they didn't get a chance to do. It can be that. It can be because they are so physically attached to a home or a place or a person that they just can't let go. They just can't. They just don't go into the light. I don't think they even see the light, because I think that they block themselves from seeing it, because they don't want to go until they've carried on whatever it is that they need to, you know, to do. I also feel sorry for ghosts in a lot of ways, because sometimes they don't even know they're gone. They don't know that they're dead. And I think that's very sad. You know, I think it's very sad that they get stuck. And so many times it's because of something that just, you know, somebody can come in and just easily take care of for them. You know, they can just come in and say, okay, you know, somebody that knows that they're there, can feel that they're there. Okay, tell me why you're stuck. Tell me what message do you have? What, you know, why can't you cross over? And once they're able to get that message across and, you know, finish whatever business that they have, then they finally can cross over. I think for some of them, they're never going to cross over, because they don't want to. You know, they don't want to be dead. You know, they don't want to give up the physical world that they had. They're afraid. You know, sometimes it's out of fear. Sometimes it's, you know, I think that happens with newer souls more than anything. You know, the older souls, for the most part, seem to always be comfortable crossing over, you know, really within, you know, some souls stay around or go back and forth for a few days after their death or a few weeks after their death, just to check in on their loved ones and things like that, especially if it was a tragic or sudden death. But for the most part, they cross over, and, you know, within a very short period of time. And then, sure, they might visit. They can come in and visit. You know, they can come back and visit. That absolutely happens. But they spend most of their time in the spiritual realm. So a ghost just has never made the crossing. You know, they've never crossed.
And so because we have free will, God can't, you know, even God won't say to them, okay, come on, like, it's time to cross. You have to cross over. I mean, they'll just have free will, and that therefore they can be stuck like that for eternity.
I think that their spirit guides stay with them, and that their angels stay with them, and they try to encourage them to cross over. But I think that because they stay more human than spirit, in a, I don't know how you would say it, but in the state that they're in, they feel still more human than they do spirit. They maybe block the messages from their spirit guides and their angels, and so they're not listening. You know, they're not listening, and they don't get it. They don't understand. And so it's a lot of times it's out of fear. I mean, it really is. And it's not just fear of not knowing what's on the other side. It's just the whole concept of being gone. You know, they're just not ready to be gone. They're not willing to give up the things, you know, that they had, the material things or the people that were in their lives.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting, too, is like you read some of these stories about haunted places like Gettysburg, for example, or Savannah, and it seems that the places that are most known to be haunted, 9 times out of 10, something horrific has taken place, whether it was a war or a battle or some kind of awful crime, gruesome crime. But the thing that always interests me is that they have, and because I'm listening to you say they feel more physical than spiritual. Well, what's interesting about that is when you read these stories about how they're able to, like, throw things around the room, and even though they're not in a body, I guess, you know, how does that work? Is that pure will, like, to be able to say, for example, a restaurant that's haunted, and suddenly, like, the pots and pans go flying across the room for no reason because there's a ghost there making that happen? How are they able to do that? Is that all through sheer will?
It's will, but it's the energy that their souls are made of. I mean, they don't have a physical body anymore to pick something up and throw it or move it or whatever, but they certainly still have the power through energy to make that happen. And so I think that it's all about their using their mind control in a way. They're using their energy to move these things, and I think the longer that they're there, the longer that they're stuck, the better they get at it. You know, they get better and better at moving things, which is why, you know, so many of these haunted places, the activity actually gets stronger with time and not less.
Wow. Well, I just want to say one more thing on this topic because I don't want to belabor the point about ghosts, but I just wanted to get your take on this because I'm kind of put off by a lot of these ghost hunting shows where it seems to me that these people are going out of their way to taunt these ghosts when really I think they deserve more pity than even if they're scary, then I would say, well, just leave them alone. Like, I just feel like there's an ethical problem, and not all of them. There may be ghost hunters who are sincere about what they're doing, and maybe they're trying to help them or at least investigate what's going on. But maybe it's because of pop culture and television and Hollywood. But I find that some of these shows, I sit there and I get so angry at the people who are investigating, going like, what are you doing? Like, why are you purposely trying to piss off this ghost? I mean, especially if something horrible happened at the scene.
Right.
And we know that that's why they're there. Like, what is your take on that, on the ethics of that?
Well, I think in a way the ghost hunting shows have done a lot to bring attention to paranormal activity and to make people aware that, you know, that the stuff does exist. So it's been good for you know, people in that respect. But I do agree that Like there are some that I don't mind because they go in and they're just in there and they're like, okay, is this place haunted or is this place not haunted? And a lot of times they're able to say, no, this place really isn't haunted. There's no true physical proof that this place has, a haunting going on. But other times, they do. I mean, I have seen the taunting. I have seen the obnoxiousness that goes on. I mean, if you live in a home that's haunted, if you're living in a house that's haunted, there's a really good chance that you can live harmoniously with that spirit in the house. You know, if you give them permission to live with you, to stay there, and just say, you know, let's just cohabitate here, and how about, you know, you stop hiding my stuff and you stop stop scaring my friends, and you know, and have like a respectful kind of balance, and then it's okay. But going in and just trying to antagonize and provoke them to come forward, if they mean to say something, I mean, you should definitely, like, if a ghost hunter is going to go into a haunted environment, they need to just find out, do you want help crossing over? Do you understand that you're dead? Do you need help crossing over? Do you have a message you want me to help you get out to someone? You know, that kind of thing. If all of those answers are no, if they just want to be left alone, then they should leave them alone, you know? But the ghost is most likely going to understand that they have to, you know, that if they're going to live there, if they're going to stay there, if they're not going to be tormented, then that they need to, you know, respect the people that live there now and not make their lives miserable too.
Yeah. Stop rattling chains in the attic at 1 o'clock in the morning.
Exactly. I mean, and you know, that's the kind of stuff that they do. And a lot of times it's just, you know, a repetitive thing that they've done when they lived there, and it's something that they've done over and over again. I don't see very often anything, personally, I don't see anything very often that's evil or malicious or trying to harm anyone. You know, most of the time they just want to be left alone. And, and I think that that's what we should do for them.
Yeah, no, I agree. I just want to say the saddest, really, and I've never seen a ghost, but I've visited Gettysburg a couple of times, and I just get such an extreme feeling of sadness when I'm there.
Right.
And obviously, I mean, everywhere you go, the ghost tour here, ghost tour there. I mean, obviously the battlefield, it was very bloody. A lot of horrible things happened there, and a lot of pain and suffering. And I just feel so bad, like, when I see the ghost tours advertised, because I think, you know, I really hope that, you know, and I'm sure they're just kind of guiding people through and telling them what happened and why a particular place is haunted, but I just get such a very strong feeling of sadness when I'm there, that it just, you know, I don't feel that emotion.
Yeah, because something very traumatic did happen, and those people did die in a very violent, and most times way before they should have. I mean,
right.
they were violently pulled from their earthly life. And when something like that happens, I mean, we should feel sorry for them, you know. And doing the ghost tours and things, fine. If you're going to have history, you know, ghost tour, the word ghost tour, that just attracts people and it makes money. You know, it makes
money.
And that's the bottom line. It's making money for people. But at least if you're going to advertise it as a ghost tour, make sure people are aware that, you know, don't be doing phony stuff. Don't be doing, stuff with projectors and making things move, you know, electronically and all this stuff. If the people are seeing something, they're going to see it. You know, if they're open to seeing it, they're probably going to see it. If the ghosts want to come through, you know, it's not up to anybody except them. And trying to provoke them is wrong. I don't necessarily like the idea of making money off of a tragedy like that.
Exactly.
You know, I think that's a little distasteful, to say the least. So, but if you're someone who's interested in that, go for the history. You know, go for the history. Go find out what these poor people died for. you know, what this was about, you know. And if you're lucky enough or unlucky enough, however you look at it, I guess, to actually physically, you know, have an encounter with someone who's been deceased, then that's you know, that's great if that's what you wanted, but don't go into it looking like, you know, hoping for that, because you can hope for it. I don't want to say don't go in hoping for it, but don't go in expecting it, because they're only going to show themselves when they have a reason to. And I think more than anything, it's about us, you know, us showing respect mm-hmm. for the fact that so many people died in such a horrific way. For whatever the reason was, and sometimes there is no good reason. So
yeah, absolutely. So Lisa, you are now working on a second book, that right? And I wanted to talk a little bit about what that book's going to be about. I guess, is it going to build on Just Believe?
No, well, I don't know. You know, okay. Here's the deal. I started working on like three different books, and it's basically come down to the one that I've decided to publish next, which I'm going to do something very different. And what I'm going to do with the next book is I have entitled it. I mean, seriously, I'm still screwing around with it, and we're probably talking, you know, a year, 6 months to a year before it comes out, at least. I don't even know, because as you know, with writing, unless somebody gives you a deadline, which, you know, I don't have, you don't really feel forced to write. You write when you kind of, you know, when you're into it. And for me, I'll write like nonstop for weeks, and then all of a sudden I'll take a month off, you know, and be like, I can't do this. I'm too beat up. I got to take a break. So, but what I decided to do for my next book is I want to write a sort of psychic development book. So many people right now, I think, are in the middle of a spiritual awakening. And they're starting to realize that they actually, because we all do have psychic abilities, we just don't know how to develop them. We don't know how to make them grow. And a lot of people want to. A lot of people don't want to squash it. You know, they really want to learn how to develop it. So what I wanted to do was I wanted to write a book about what, you know, basically the basics about being psychic, what it means, what different types of psychic abilities are out there. And then I want to put a bunch of exercises in the book about, you know, how you can exercise your intuition to be able to start using your psychic abilities, whether it's just to get through your day or whether it's because you want to, you know, this is what you want to do for a living. So I want to really, I want to really focus on getting the everyday person who doesn't think that they have any gifts to at least realize that everybody does have a gift and everybody has intuition, and the intuition can be critical to making good choices in your life, to staying on your path. And so that's pretty much what I'm at. It's going to also include, I'm actually going to start having a psychic development class that I'm also working on. So it's going to be like an extended class kind of thing. I'm writing the class course, and then I'm going to write the book around that. So, so it'll actually
be exciting.
Yeah, it's going to be a way. I'm basically going to, you know, the class is going to involve, you know, me certifying people as being intuitive, psychic, mediums, whatever their gift happens to be, and the book is going to be an extension of that.
Very cool. So now with this class, it'll be people can physically go to your location or a location where you're going to hold this?
I think I'm going to. Originally that was the concept, and I'm not saying I'm not going to do that, but I think what I'm going to do is probably make it more of a Skype thing where people can, you know, I can record the class, I can do a live course or two, or I can do a live course and then have recorded classes so that people can do it in their own time frame. And take the course, and then all they have to do is, you know, do some sort of phone reading, you know, that I either listen in on or that they do with me directly, you know, and then they can become certified after they've taken the course and proven that they have developed their abilities to a point where I'm comfortable saying that they actually have, you know, a true gift that can be you know, that can be acknowledged and actually certified. So it's going to be really fun. It's going to be really, really interesting. The course is going to be fun. And it's going to, you know, I'm all about making everything fun. I hate boring. Boring bores me. So, I definitely want to make it something fun and exciting and something that people are going to really learn a lot from and make people understand that this does not make you a freak. This does not make you, you know, belong, you know, you're not going to belong in a circus or something. You can actually just be a normal person like me and live intuitively. Shut your brain off. Stop thinking so much. Stop feeling everything so much with your heart, you know, and start paying attention to that gut feeling. That gut feeling is your psychic ability. That gut feeling is your intuition. And if we all follow that, we're nobody's ever going to go wrong.
Yeah, that's awesome. And if it's online, then, you know, you can get people can be anywhere, which is great. You know, they can take the course right on their computer.
That's what I wanted to do with, you know, you're so limited, especially where I live. I'm in the Philadelphia suburbs, and out here there's, you know, my house is built on an old farmland, you know, like on my development used to have corn growing on it and stuff. So I'm really in the boonies. So it's like, not truly the boonies, but pretty close. And, because of that, I'm very limited to the amount, to the amount of people that I can touch. So if I put it online, then, you know, people are going to be able to do it from wherever. And, you know, and I definitely want to make it personal. I don't want people just to be able to download a program and boom, you're certified. No, this is going to be real. This is going to be real. This is going to be real teaching, like you're in a classroom, and it's going to be, you know, there's going to be real homework involved, real, you know, real exercises involved. And then a real test at the end, basically, that proves that you have developed what innately we all already have inside of us anyway, because we all have it. Everybody has it. You know, and everybody says, I'm not psychic. Yeah, you are. There's something there. Everybody has it. It's just that we all don't know how to access it. We don't all know how to make it real, you know, to make it something that we can make it something tangible, you know?
Yeah. Well, I'm excited. So you're going to have to keep me posted when your course is ready. Cause I think this is a great idea.
It's going to be fun. I'm really excited about it. I mean, it's always something that I looked for when I was first developing my psychic abilities and stuff. And I couldn't find anywhere, you know, unless you flew to California or something, you know what I mean? But once in a while you see one in Arizona or, you know, in California or someplace, but nothing that you could actually do online that didn't feel like you weren't really getting, you weren't really learning something. The ones that I found were all ones that I felt like, I'm not really learning anything. I don't really get this. You know, this isn't really helping me. And there wasn't a way to ask questions and all that. That's why I want to make it live, you know, a live Skype event so people can ask questions and actually go through the program just like they're sitting in front of me.
Fun. Well, that sounds awesome. So, Lisa, in like the last 10 minutes, I definitely want to talk about your show on RightStream, Just Believe, because you've been interviewing so many fascinating guests. So tell us a little bit about that and who some of your guests have been and who you're planning on bringing on in the future.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I've had so many awesome, awesome guests. I've been trying to cover everything, you know, like everything, spiritual, metaphysical, psychic, paranormal, you know, you name it. I've been trying to cover it in some way, shape, or form. And I'm really meeting some amazing, amazing people. And I've really been having a great time doing the show. I'm booked all the way. Gosh, I'm all the way. I have two guests a week. I'm booked all the way through, I think, the end of August.
Oh, my God. Good for you. You're doing better than I am.
that's like two guests a week, you know. So there are so many people that have such great things to say. I have, you know, people on that are MDs, and they talk about, you know, like diets for, like, holistic diets and holistic ways of dealing with medical problems. I have a lot of psychics on. I have a lot of people that do hypnosis, past life regressions, things like that. I'm really enjoying all the guests. This coming week, let me think. It's hard for me to even remember. There's so many people. This week I have two different guests on, and they are the one is a man by the name of, and I hate when I don't know how to pronounce their name because I always feel like I'm butchering their names because I'm so bad at pronouncing names. But his name's James, I think it's Goi, G-O-I, I don't know, Junior. And he does this whole thing with how to attract money using mind power. And I'm listening. I'm like talking to him, you know, like on through email and everything. And I'm like, well, who doesn't need to, you know, attract money, and to be able to do that with mind power? Okay, that's kind of cool. So I'm going to have him on as a guest, and that's the name of his book, How to Attract Money Using Mind Power. So he's going to be one of my guests this coming Sunday. And then my other guest is a lady who wrote a book called How to Go from Boohoo to Woohoo in 90 days.
I love that.
I know. So her name's Cassandra James, and so yeah, I think I titled the show Woohoo, How to Attract Money or something, or attracting money. I don't know. I come up with goofy names for the show. So yeah. So every week it's something, you know, it's something different. I try to go all over the place, you know, with a bunch of different things. I had on a paranormal occult researcher who deals with demons a couple weeks ago. One of my favorite guests I've had on a couple of times is Nicole Guillaume, and she owns GuidingEchoes.com, and she's a tarot reader, and she's awesome. And I'm actually going to take her. She has an online course for tarot. I'm going to be taking her course here in a couple of weeks. It's like a month-long course, like once a week or something, again, through Skype. And she does some incredible – she's been doing live tarot readings on the show sometimes. So there's just a lot of different things. The show's on every Sunday at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And, of course, if you don't catch it, you can always catch it in the archives on anything that's on the RightStream Network. So – you know, I'm getting a lot of live listeners and, you know, a great amount of archive listeners, and it's, you know, I'm getting a lot of great feedback, so I'm real happy with it.
Well, you're doing a phenomenal job for somebody that never hosted before. I know you've been guests on many, many shows over the years, but you're doing a phenomenal job as host, so I wanted to just thank you for that.
Hosting is hard. I never realized how hard hosting was. And I thought it was just going to be hard getting the guests. Well, I can get the guests. The guests are coming to me. I'm able to do that. But hosting is a difficult thing. It's you know, just being prepared. I keep thinking, what does poor Katie Couric go through? I mean, Katie Couric having these guests, and she said, I'm reading these books. And, you know, I mean, you really have to be up on what the person is doing in order to ask them questions. So, you know, I think, you know, that it's a more difficult thing, and, you know, you're hitting buttons and you're hoping you're hitting the right buttons.
Yeah. And you're hoping that Blog Talk Radio and Skype play nice together.
Yeah, exactly. And hoping that you don't sneeze or curse or, you know, something horrible.
Yeah, no, well, you're doing an excellent job. And I wasn't able to listen live this week. I am going to check out the archive, but I love listening live because you can call in. Like, you know, when you interviewed, I think it was Christia Cummings Flack, the angelic communicator, she was phenomenal. And
she was excellent, yeah.
I called in and had a great reading. She read you. It was fun.
Yeah, and that's one of the fun things. You know, I love when people call in, and I give the number out 1,000 times on the show, and I send it out, and you know, and on Twitter and on Facebook and things while the show's going on, and we get a few callers. I mean, it's tough. It's Sunday, and it's kind of, the weather's getting a lot better, so people aren't just sitting around. But the good thing is with Blog Talk, you can listen. You can dial in from your phone. You can dial in, you know, and listen from. You don't have to be stuck in front of your computer to do it. You know, you can call from your phone or your iPad or, you know, whatever, and listen to the show that way. And then if you're dialing in and listening and you decide you have a question, boom, you hit number one and poof, you're in the queue, you know. So
it's awesome.
it's really it's really very simple, and you know, and I love the idea that we have that capability, and people are definitely using it, and I'm hoping, you know, as time goes on, I've only done, gosh, I don't even know, it's been like maybe I started, I think my first show was March 10th, so I've done maybe 10 shows, something like that. And, you know, so I'm hoping as time goes on, we even get more and more live listeners and more archive listeners and, you know.
Yeah, the key with this is consistency, and we will over time. I mean, I found that out just from hosting other shows that it's not an overnight process. It's kind of like social media where you're building those relationships. And this is really another form of social media. So definitely over time. The numbers start to go up. And so, and then that's already starting to happen on our network. So I'm excited.
Yeah,
I've been seeing a steady increase.
I've definitely been watching that. I've been watching it go up, and I'm watching everybody's, you know, between John and you and my show. And now with, wow, a fourth person possibly coming on, that's going to be great. We're going to have a whole, hopefully week of Rightstream guests or hosts.
That's definitely my goal.
Yeah, that'd be great.
So, keep that in mind, Lisa, as you're interviewing people, too. If anybody's interested in hosting their own show, we have opportunities available right now Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. So,
I do mention it, actually, when I am talking to people, I do mention that they can get on. And some people are really interested in it, and some people think, wow, what a lot of work, and you really don't make any money. So, but you do in some ways. You know, it's not really about getting – it's not really about cash at this point. It's about getting your message out there. And, you know, and of course, if you have a book to sell or you have a service to sell, it's, you know, it's that's a big part of it too. But, you know, it's nice to have sponsors. It's nice to have people that, you know, that are helping us support the show, because we do, you know, I mean, Daria, you know, you have to pay for this stuff. So it's nice to have a sponsor here and there, or somebody, you know, that donates just because they enjoy listening to it. So
absolutely. And as we grow too, we'll eventually attract that. It kind of goes back to the numbers and building up the network. So we'll get there. I have no doubt. But Lisa, before we go off the air today, let everybody know where they can find you on Twitter and your website and anywhere else that you might be on social media.
Okay, it's real, real simple. My website is www.lisatarves.com, and links to everything are on my website. So if you don't remember anything else, if you remember lisatarves.com, you'll be able to find everything. I'm on Twitter under Lisa Tarvis. I have three Facebook pages, which is just ridiculous, but one of them is my personal page. One of them is, and if you friend me on my personal page, I will accept the request, but I'm just more, I like to warn everybody, hey, you don't know, I never know what you're going to get on my personal page, because it's my personal page, and sometimes I lose my mind too. I have my Metaphysical Healing page, which is the name of my company, Metaphysical Healing by Lisa Tarvis, and then I have a page that the publisher made for me for my book called Just Believe. So that is also one of the pages that I have on Facebook. So all the links to everything are on my website, and I, of course, my book can be found, like I said earlier, anywhere books are sold. Amazon.com seems to be the most popular, but there are lots of them out there. And you know, you can find all the radio show. I have all the radio shows I've done as a guest, and all the radio shows that I've done as a host with the Rightstream Network on my website. Not always perfectly updated, but, you know, I try.
Well, you're doing an excellent job. Well, Lisa, I want to thank you, and especially because I just let this in. We never took a break today, I just realized, and I usually do that. So I got so into our conversation, I just completely forgot. But I want to thank you for spending time with us today.
I didn't think about that either. We didn't really take a break. How about that?
We both like to talk. But anyway, I will be tuning in. I will definitely be tuning in on Sunday, and I'm going to check out the archive from this week's show because I wasn't able to listen live. But thank you again.
You're going to love it. Thanks a lot. Thanks for having me on, Daria. It was a lot of fun.
Good. Take care. It was fun for me, too.
Okay.
Talk to you soon.
All right. Bye.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we have just we're down to 2 minutes, so I just want to again invite you all to check out the Rightstream archives. You can check out Lisa's show, Just Believe, which airs live every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern. You can check out Military Monday with John D. Gresham. That's every Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern. And, of course, Rightstream Tuesday with Daria Ann, which is me. every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Eastern, blogtalkradio.com/rightstream. Until next week, keep rejoicing in the flow of creativity.